Hey, this is Chris, and thanks for listening to the Chime On podcast. We want to hear from you, so we implemented a system, and it's called Pod Inbox. So if you want to leave us a message, give us some feedback, or interact with us directly, go to www.podinbox.com/ChineOn.
You look like a sports. You look like a retired sports commentator.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like you played baseball for a couple of years, and then.
And then this is my new job now.
Yeah. Couldn't make it in baseball, so now you're just doing podcasts.
Yeah. Well, it was a good run back on the field, but you know,
took a line drive right to the chest, and I had to retire.
Yeah. Basically. What do you think of these angles?
Yeah, they're good. They'll work.
It's perfect.
Dude, I gotta stop losing weight, man. I'm down to 170 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. I think I'm dying.
You feel like you're dying?
No, I just lost too much weight.
Why do you think you lost too much weight?
I've been walking at the airport, and then I started cycling carbs.
What is that?
Like, one day I won't eat carbs, and the next day I will.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, how does that work?
One day you eat carbs and the next day you
don't
eat carbs.
But like, what's the point?
It's supposed to help you burn more fat, and it's just supposed to be healthier because carbs.
Let's just roll into it.
Yeah, because carbs turn into sugar, so it's unhealthy. So I was trying to eat less carbs and do like more of like a paleo natural thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
What got you on this kick?
I just wanted to be more healthy. I was eating fast food. I was on the road.
Did your diarrhea?
Yeah.
Was that a big
drug? So that was part of it. So I just said, okay, I'm done with this.
And so then, have you been doing this for like a week?
No, I've been doing it for like 4 months.
What?
Yeah. Dude, 6 months ago, I was almost 200 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. I was like,
I don't know how I didn't notice this.
I don't know. Yeah.
So you lost almost 30 pounds in like 4 months?
Yeah, like 6 months. And then I stopped lifting weights and I started walking a bunch.
Really?
Yeah.
So has it been since you started at the airport pretty much?
Yeah. But then I started like skipping meals with Lily and
it's
just been a combination of things.
Yeah. Dude, I feel weird like after the hernia surgery. Like, yeah. Not, I can't do like any physical exercise or anything like that. And I still can't do that for another week and a half.
When you sit down and stand up, can you feel there's not something?
Yeah, like it.
There's still something to healing. Do they stitch you up?
Yeah, they do like laparoscopically mm-hmm. through your stomach. But like, so I got like a few incisions there.
Yeah.
But they went in, they did everything. And, you know, I definitely had a hernia for sure. But the reason why I got the surgery is because I have this like bump in my groin. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's what they took care of. And then I felt it like today. And it's like that the bump is there. I'm like, maybe I didn't understand what a hernia was.
No way. So you for sure had a hernia.
Yeah.
Maybe you have another hernia.
I don't know what this is. So I got to follow up. I got to talk to him.
They fixed the wrong hernia.
No, they did the right side. And I definitely had something. I had fucking definitely sports injury or something for a long time. But
So they fixed something. So that's good.
Why did you get on this carb cycling? How did you like find out
I just
about
I talked to somebody that was in really good shape and he's like, dude, he's like
tell me your secret.
Yeah, this is my secret. And like, I'm not an expert or anything, but I like to try these new things. Like, you want to try to be as healthy and feel as good as you can. So I started doing it, and I'm not consistent with it, and I've sometimes to skip meals, and I was kind of like started doing intermittent fasting also, where like I wouldn't eat breakfast and I wouldn't eat lunch till like 1 or 2, and then I have dinner, and then again, so I think it all just came into play.
So what is carb cycling?
So it's like you can, however, whatever body type you have or however you choose that you want to do this, you can have carbs one day and then the next day not have carbs, or have like carbs for 2 days and then not have carbs for the next day.
Okay.
And it just...
It is just basically you're dumping carbs from your diet.
Yeah, you're eating less carbohydrates.
I guess that makes sense. So like... What
because I'm never going to cut them out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always going to eat bread.
Yeah.
I'm always going to eat, like, have some snacks and things like that. So it's like, for me to say, like, I'm going to be super healthy and never have carbs would just be dumb.
Yeah. Well, you really can't do that. I mean, it's hard, but it's weird. I started doing that like maybe a month ago or something like that. And Rebecca, that's where these fucking nuts and stuff came from. Yeah. She's making me these like snack packs and stuff.
That's good.
Because otherwise I just eat the shit that's here or I eat a ton of sugar. So
yeah,
this has been good to switch it up, but I've been kind of doing that, like cutting it way back on the sugar and the carbs and stuff as much as possible. But I don't know, when I don't have the prepared meals, it's kind of harder.
Well, the thing I noticed about you is that you eat a ton, but you eat like a little bit throughout the day.
Yeah. Like a rabbit.
Yeah, it's like a little snack.
Just a little snacker.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I am.
But you stay in like good shape and stuff, so.
Try. It feels weird to not be able to exercise, though.
Yeah.
Because.
Have you been doing a lot of exercise?
Before?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot more like biking and stuff. I think once I realized that I did have a hernia and that like I could no longer ignore that my fucking whole entire right side of my abs was like in pain,
bulging out and stuff too.
I didn't have any like bulging or anything like that.
So you didn't see it.
It's
you
a
just
different kind of
it.
Hernia that I had. It's
inguinal.
Like, yeah, it's an inguinal. So like, but I definitely had something. It definitely is impacting my like right side because I would do jujitsu or like do a workout and I could just feel like my right lower abs just were like strained or something like that.
Yeah.
So I've been switching just to like bike riding and like push-ups and like just body weight stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
So I feel like I kind of like slendered out almost. Mm. It's like my grandma's worst nightmare. She's
slender.
Like, you're getting so skinny.
How are you skipping meals?
Yeah. Like, you not eating?
Yeah.
Well, why'd you pick carbs? So like who... Well, I don't know if you want to say, but...
No, and I'm not even, like, that serious. I wasn't really that serious about it, but then I just started doing more cardio, and I've never been really one to do a ton of cardio.
Yeah. You tried to like, go against your body type, though, for a while. You tried to be, like a bodybuilder type, and you're not really like that.
No,
so
man.
You're eating fucking protein.
Yeah, I'm a skinny guy, and I guess what you'd call, like, an ectomorph, and I got it.
I'm an ectomorph, bro.
I'm an ectomorph. That's what a mesomorph for us. I'm a mesomorph. So I have like a skinny, I'm a skinny guy. And I started working out with a guy that was completely opposite build of me and also one of the strongest humans that I've met to this day.
Yeah.
And I try to like keep up with him. And in doing that, when you're doing these like powerlifting workouts and these like cleans and squats, and, you know, 300-pound plus bench press, then it's like, okay, you have to eat a ton of food. But then the second you stop doing that, then you're still eating a ton of food, and then it's not good.
What was it like doing that routine and like doing all that, lifting heavy weights? And
I was just sore all the time.
Really?
Yeah. But it was cool, man. The thing that he taught me, which is probably one of the most valuable piece of, I guess, like weightlifting information that I've ever received from anybody, is that you work off of percentages. So like if you're building, so if you're building a plan for yourself, you want to get from point A to point B. So, right. So like I told him, I said, dude, like my goal, I want to bench press 225 pounds. This was in 2018. And I was like, but I'll never bench press 225 pounds 10 times. That was my goal. I want to get it 10 times. And he's like, no, you can absolutely do that. Dude, how many times can you do it right now? I was like, one. I can get like a struggle one.
Yeah.
You know, lock it out, put it back up. And I worked out with him, dude, for, I want to say 8 months. And I was cranking out 225 10 times, like no problem.
Really?
Yeah. And what he had taught me was that you start with your 225. You know, that is your one rep max. Okay. So he made a workout plan. He'd say we're going to do bench 3 times a week. This is your goal. We're going to do bench 3 times a week. You're going to do on a Monday, you're going to do, say five, you're going to do 5 sets of bench. For the first set, you're going to do 10 reps of 50% of your one rep max. And then, you know, on the next day or whatever, you're going to do incline and you're going to have a different one rep max for your incline bench. And you're going to do this percentage with this many reps. And every week you increase that percentage little by little by little. Well, it's like the compound effect that we talk about. All of a sudden, within month five, you're doing 100% for 10 reps of your one rep max. And all of a sudden, now your one rep max is, 350 pounds instead of 225.
What made you want to start doing that?
I don't know. I like to go to the gym. I like to lift. And I did it towards the end of high school is really when I first started getting into, exercise. And I really didn't do it much until then. And then college, I saw results that I liked, and then you start your job after college and you just kind of fade away. And I was like, all right, I'm going to get back into this. I want to do something that'll keep me healthy. And so I got into it. So it's cool, man. I always wanted to see what I could do.
Yeah. Getting stronger and shit.
Yeah. Like it's cool, man. It feels good.
Did you see like a movie or something? You're like, I want to be like that. No. I watched Scorpion King 15 times and that's what I want to be.
Like. Yeah, no, but that's no, I'm not going to look like The Rock. But no, I don't think it was like a movie in particular.
Yeah, not with that attitude. But actually, if you break it down and you just do a percentage of it, then you can actually be like The Rock.
Oh, I hate you. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. You could, maybe. Probably not me because he's like a foot taller than I am. And
why'd you shift? Why is this? Yeah, you do look like you look better than you did when you were actually like doing all of the like workouts and shit. When you were
six burgers a day and
when you were on it, you looked like really strong and everything. But yeah, I guess actually now that you say that when you stopped doing it, cause it wasn't your body type.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just didn't like fit you.
Yeah.
And but you like look like you're the way that you're supposed to be.
Yeah. I feel like I'm the way I need to gain a little bit more weight, but I feel like I'm more or less the way that I should be. I just need to, exercise a little bit more than I am right now. I just don't need to do what I did before.
So why did you actually choose this time? Like how come this time you're like, was it just like maybe like maturity?
I guess
maturity?
It was kind of like, it's just like, when you're like, I want to be as strong as I can be. I want to be a huge guy. And then it's like,
then you do it.
Like, okay, I don't really want to be huge. I don't want to eat all those calories. It's unnecessary for your body to like have all that weight on it, especially when you're like, you have a small frame.
Yeah.
So yeah, probably a little bit maturity, I'd say.
So what is the, are you doing a 60 day challenge?
Kind of.
Do you want to talk about it or no?
Can. Yeah. Yeah. We can talk about it.
What are you doing?
So I'm interested in this, like this e-commerce world.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think there's a ton of money to be made. So I started my 60 day challenge. I have this textbook and I've divided up of the pages and things that I want to learn, because if I just say, oh, I'm going to try to just read through this textbook, I'm never going to read through the textbook. So I don't know how many pages it has, but it came out to like 16 pages per day. So my first 30 days, I'm going to learn how to do this. Just like, this is like a side, usually a little side project. So the first 30 days, I'm going to learn how to do it, essentially find out what it's about step by step. And then I've watched some YouTube videos and stuff. And then the next 30 days, if my first 30 days pans out well, then I want to implement it and I want to like start doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you sticking to it?
So far, yeah. Yeah, so
what
far.
What day are we into it? 6 days?
It's
the 6th.
Yeah,
October 6th.
So we're 6 days into it, yeah. I got to do tonight still. But yeah, I did miss a day, but then I just caught up the next night.
Dude, good for you.
Yeah, I'm trying.
What does it feel like so far?
I don't know. I was less interested in it now than I was in day one, but I'm just going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Because like we had talked about your, when you're doing the music stuff, there's some days where you're just like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And some like you hit points, you're like, all right, maybe this isn't like what I'm like want to do on the side. But then I think that there's more, like, I think it's going to lead me into other things that I might end up being into.
Yeah. Yeah. That is all part of it. You got to just fucking stick it out, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, I was going to actually give this to you before, but now since we're on the show, makes it seem more legit. Right? This is called the Personal Credo Journal. So this guy, Jim Lohr, he was on Tim Ferriss, and I heard him talking about like the voice in your own head and how you talk to yourself. And after like hearing that episode, I was like, oh, I want to get this thing and see what it's about. So it's literally like a 90-day challenge thing. I actually only got 50 something.
You were telling me about this.
But it's like a bunch of writing prompts. The book's called The Personal Credo Journal. But yeah, dude, take this and use that. Once you go through this piece, I'll probably get that back in a few months and try and do it myself.
So you think I should read this before I continue the journey?
Check it out. Like just open up one of the pages. Like you see, it's like day something.
Oh,
here's the prompt. So basically it's like, take 10 minutes a day, even if you can only do like 5 minutes a day, and just do those prompts and stick with it. Because part of it is like, if you're doing this kind of challenge thing, part of what will help is having like other things that are somewhat consistent with it. It's like, you know, building a little bit of a routine around it. You could either do it morning or night, like whatever it is, but yeah, if you...
That's cool. No, thanks, man. That would...
Yeah.
Seems like it could...
I think it'll help. It helped me a lot.
Yeah. How did it help?
Like, the questions in there are really good. And this was around the time when I was reading the Four Agreements. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of doing them in tandem.
What's that?
Yeah, what is that? Part of, like, the way that you talk to yourself, right? So, if you've got... I don't know if you have this problem, but like I self-talk is like piece of shit. You're a fucking idiot. Like, what are you doing? This is stupid. You're stupid. All this stuff. So kind of reshifting helps to reshift the way that your inner voice works. Cause I guess what this guy found is by training and working with like thousands of the top professionals over 40 years or something, like one of the biggest things was the way that they view themselves and talk to themselves has like huge impact on their ability to be present in sports, right? So like if somebody's like a top golfer or top tennis player, but they're like their mantra in their head on the field is like, you fucked that up. You missed it. Like, what's wrong with you? The rest of that game, you're going to be playing with just that slight piece of weight just fucking weighing you down, you know? And so just changing the way that you think of that stuff in kind of an unexpected way. Like it doesn't ask necessarily direct questions that you would think you should be asking yourself.
How long ago did you read this?
I did about 50 days of it earlier this year, maybe around the time I was doing that challenge, maybe January or...
All right, it's like eight months ago. Were you able to stay consistent with like your inner dialogue with yourself?
When I was doing it.
And like, what about like right now though? Like, do you still find yourself like giving yourself positive reinforcement? Like when you're like talking to yourself, or do you still
go back to like, I'm definitely less harsh on myself.
Yeah.
Not in the initial though. The nice thing about that was the ability to take a step back and then realize like you shouldn't talk to yourself that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the initial gut reaction now that I'm like that removed from it is like, the fuck are you doing? What's wrong with you? You know, like you're like an idiot. But now it's like after that initial thing, the wheels start spinning. You start getting in that like loop of like anxiety. And you're like, oh, dude, hold on. This is the only thing that will happen if you talk to yourself like this. Like, this is not because I'm crazy or I have anxiety problems. Yeah. It's like, I'm more predisposed to that. But like, I can make that choice now that I'm aware. Before, I couldn't make that choice.
So even though your initial reaction might be like, oh, I can't believe I did this. You're such an idiot. Now it's like, you're like, you do that still, but then you're like, all right, dude, everything's fine. You're good.
Everything's going to be fucking fine.
Continue to move on.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, it's going to be all right, but you also can't be a loser. There's value to that voice in your head, but like, okay, what can you actually do? What's important?
Isn't it crazy that a small little thing like that can just like throw a wrench in your whole day?
Yeah.
There's this, I don't know, maybe like Denzel Washington or somebody said this. It's like, all right, so you imagine like your day is like a bank account, right? You have, say you have $10,000 in your bank account and somebody comes up and they steal, you know, $1,000 from you. Are you going to just take your bank account, just throw away the other $9,000? It's like, no, of course you're not. So if somebody, you know, you have something bad happen in your day, you're not going to like just,
that's a good point.
You shouldn't just let it ruin the rest of your day. But most of us do that.
Yeah.
You know, something bad happens. You're like, oh my God, my day is ruined.
Do you ever do that?
Yeah.
Like, what does anything come to mind?
No, nothing, like nothing in mind, but I try not to let
I've never done that.
No.
I'm not saying like it like I seize every day.
Stop it. I'm not saying like it just like absolutely ruins my day, but it like, dude, it'll like set me off to be in a bad mood the rest of the day.
Fuck yeah. Dude, there's all kinds of little things. Like I didn't get good sleep last night. The dog was like fucking
yapping.
No.
Yap.
No. Oh. Shitting. A bunch.
Oh, no.
All throughout the night. So it's just good practice for when the baby comes.
That is, yeah.
But yeah, like it was just like, I didn't know that was like, I was feeling off from that. And then I came in and Greg's like, yeah, we got a podcast at 11 that we're doing. And I was like, oh, I don't have a calendar invite for it. He's like, oh, I didn't send it to you, but we're doing one. And I was like, all right, cool. Yeah. Like I was able to roll with it, but it's just like, you've got these things in your day. And they don't even have to be bad. It's just like a shift. And then all of a sudden, like that bank, like half of your bank account is gone. And you're like, I couldn't even think for the day. Cause I was I was tired when I started. And like now the whole day pretty much just gets away from you. And you just kind of fight to get something done.
Yeah.
But that's a good part about the challenges is that it's like the thing that you have to fight to do regardless.
Yeah. Which I am right now. It's like, I don't really want to read 16 pages of a textbook, but
yeah,
might as well.
What stuff is like, what is like the basis? Like, what are you learning so far?
Dude, some of the pages are like overly descriptive.
Really?
Like how to log into a computer.
Oh,
like that. So I'm like, I'm going to skip over this page. I'm going to skip over this page. But some of it's good. There's like a lot of statistics, like, what is it? Like, I think, so 50% of products now are like bought online. And out of those 50% of products that are bought online, like a huge majority of those are bought just on Amazon alone. So like, just like learning things like that, it makes you realize the opportunities that there are to do, you know, stuff online.
Yeah, it is
no
crazy.
Matter what it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
the world is changing, you know, to there. I can see that, you know, brick and mortar stores are obviously very readily available and everybody goes to them still, but to see the trends, you know, they like showed the trends from whatever, 2000, year 2000, now to like 2020. And it's just like every single year, it's just like, it went from like tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions to billions. It's like,
yeah.
Astounding.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the trend has been going that way for a long time. I don't know. I don't really buy all that much stuff off Amazon. I do buy things online though.
Yeah.
But I buy them from other places, but I don't really buy it. Like I buy all this shit from like B&H Photo or something like that.
Yeah. Do you use like a PayPal account and stuff when you buy? Yeah.
Yeah. PayPal I think is way better because you can buy stuff and then and just not have to like put your credit card into places.
Yeah. I have a PayPal account. I actually got the PayPal account because I bought a record from Thess One on Instagram.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That like it was like a comedy album, right?
Yeah, dude. It's so cool.
Dude, I've been listening to Where the Peace Lock Ends. I've listened to like, I like that song, Everybody Must Get Stoned Once.
It's so good.
That is so fucking good. I've listened to that like, I don't know, 5 or 6 times in the past few days.
Yes, me too. I listened to it a ton. I was trying to figure out what the beginning.
I listened to it because you had it on in your car, like on your, when we were driving up to 311, you had part of that on. I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to check this out. And then, cause I'm planning on getting the MPC. So it's I'm like, all right, let me check this out. And I was like, wow, this is so fucking good.
Yeah. Isn't it cool?
Yeah, it's really cool.
I watched an interview with him and he's like, I'm like really bad at playing instruments, but he goes, I'm really good at chopping up like everybody else's music.
Yeah.
And it in itself is an art.
Dude, it's totally an art.
Like when you start listening to like the different stuff and like the different places that he'll like lay the instruments, and it's like he'll take one song and just turn it into something totally different.
Dude, the Taylor Swift video, that song.
Yeah.
That's fucking sweet.
Yeah.
And it's like he's got something that he's able to do where he like makes like where he like makes it so you're like floating on something. Like the music is like floating on something.
Yeah, you're right.
It's cool.
Well, you know how he does that? He actually talks about that. It's he said something with he like takes one of the samples and then he like makes a middle out of it.
Yeah, like he'll like turn the mids. He'll turn like the speed of it really high and then like put like a high pitched and like a slightly higher pitch, and it's like so it'd be like a loop of something of like let's say it's like ba da da. And then, like, one of them's like, like sped up really fast. And then, like, put them together. That's fucking.
Dude, I love it. I'm pumped that you're going to get the NPC. Do you know what the NPC was originally made for?
I think you told me. No, what is
it? It was made for rock guitarists because.
They didn't want to have bands?
Because apparently, people in the, like, that play rock and roll, they can never hold, like, their bands together. So
I would know nothing about
that. Yeah, you would know all about this. So the guy was like, that's it. I'm tired of trying to like go through all these drummers. I'm just going to like become an engineer and make a drum program. And then he made like this little simple NPC, and then it's evolved over time into this like hip hop, like essential piece of their music.
Yeah. Dude, I'm excited to do it. So like, I'm going to take that and I just moved my pedals and shit out into the garage. So once the baby comes, I'll have like a quiet place, but I'll be able to like set that up. I can be slightly louder and then just like make music out there.
Yeah. You're going to get lost in that NPC.
Dude, I hope so. Yeah. We were playing around with it a few months ago at your house and we came up with something cool in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Going to fucking sell a million records, but it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool just us messing around for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And imagine what you can do for like with like a few hours, man, some good vinyl records and sampling stuff.
Dude, I'm actually pumped to like start to be able to do that. Yeah. I tried to do that into the DigiTact, the black box. It's not that it's so hard. It's like something about that physical piece of equipment, it's just not made for my brain in the way that I'm looking to use
the DigiTech.
Yeah
Some people hook up that DigiTech into the NPC.
Oh really?
I've seen them do it. I don't know what the purpose of it is. DigiTech is a drum machine in itself, right?
Yeah I mean, they just kind of like do slightly different things. Like the NPC is kind of like a DAW but in a box, like
it's like
Logic to go.
They call it Ableton, like a sequencer. I guess
the
NPC
sequencer.
Yeah, like people refer to him as like, oh, it's my sequencer.
Huh. I guess you could use it as a sequencer where you just like you set the beats and it just goes like 16 bars or 16 notes, 4 bars, and just one, two, three, four, five, six.
And then you pop your next beat down or whatever.
I'm excited to use it, dude.
Yeah. Oh, it's so fun.
I'm pumped. I think it'll be cool.
Even when you just like push the power button, man, and just the screen all lights up, it's all just very well put together.
I gotta get it. I just gotta go fucking get it.
Just go get it, man.
I think maybe I'll drive up to Guitar Center tomorrow and
you can order it off Amazon.
I know.
You want to make an excuse to go to Guitar Center right now?
Oh, I guess kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, they probably have one there.
Have somebody yell at me about a mask.
Put your mask on.
Put your mask on if you want to look at this used pedal.
You really don't have to have masks in places still. I try to wear them, though.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I don't care what you do. I don't care about you.
Yeah.
You piece of shit. What story you said you had a story that you wanted to tell.
Oh, dude. So while we're like on... Like, we're kind of in the same stuff. We like art. We like music. So, have you ever heard of this band called Death?
Yes. Are they like a Norwegian?
No.
Oh, no. This is a Zimbabwe?
No. No, no, no. This is super cool. So, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to start this. So, there's two bands called Death. There's one that's a metal band. It's not them. This band is what they're now considered the inventors of punk rock.
Really?
Yeah. So it'll take a few minutes. I'll tell you the whole thing. So there's a documentary. It's called A Band Called Death is the name of the documentary. So there's three brothers. Heckney, I think is their last name. There's three of them. The guy that would become kind of the leader of the band, his name was David. So this happened, let's just start in the early 1960s. They lived in Detroit, Michigan, and they lived in a small neighborhood. David found a guitar in the alleyway when they were, you know, young teenagers. He brought the guitar in. His dad, and there were three black brothers, which is important because during that time, the way that the other two brothers talk about it is that they weren't typically were those in that culture. They would listen to Motown. They would listen to Earth, yeah. Wind and Fire. But he said at a young age, his dad sat them down and said, like, hey, let's watch the Beatles. And then they went and saw a Who concert, and they went and saw Alice Cooper. And after they went and saw them, they were like, what is this?
Yeah.
This is insane. This music is nuts. Early 1960s. Their mom gets in some kind of accident and she gets a settlement. This would probably be like 1962, 63. And she says, okay, boys, there's four brothers, but only three of them were like musically inclined. And they said, she's like, I'm going to give you guys some money. What do you do with it? And they're like, well, we want to start a band. So we're going to go buy, like they bought some
equipment.
Like, yeah. They went and bought some Stratocasters. They went and bought some really nice amps, double stack, like the nicest drum kit you could get during the time. So they get all this stuff and they start playing music. But it's not like Motown music. It's not like Earth, Wind, and Fire. They did kind of start off as like a funk band, but it just kind of evolved into something else. So David, the guy that essentially kind of started the band and it was kind of like his idea, he wrote the songs. He started like writing some stuff that wasn't typically like, it was like kind of like rock music. But it was just kind of like fast, kind of raw, and they just had an awesome time playing it. And their dad had passed away a couple years down the road, and I can't remember if they had a name to their band or whatnot. But they had seven and 11 songs. Their dad passed away, and he comes to his other brothers and he said, "Hey, I know what I want to call the band." And they're like, "What is it?" And he goes, "I think we should call it Death." And they're like, "What?" Like back then, they're like, you don't call a band Death.
Yeah.
Like The Who, you know, Led Zeppelin. Like that's, yeah. you don't. So he's like, I think that people have such a bad connotation of the word death. He's like, I think that it needs to be like, it's just another part of life. Like this is, and they were all very spiritual, very religious. So the two brothers, they're still alive. And they're talking about an interview. They're like, so we just like backed up our brother. We're like, okay, like let's call the band Death.
Fuck yeah.
Yep. So they started playing. Obviously, people were kind of standoffish by the name Death, and their music was kind of fast, kind of loud. And so they had trouble getting to play places. So their mom would let them play and practice at the house between the hours of 3 and 6. And they would just, and everybody in the neighborhood knew them. They're like, yep, they're playing their music. They're going at it. And one day David was like, I think we should go try to get a record deal somewhere. So one of his brothers explains, he takes the yellow pages and he puts them on the wall and he stands back and he throws a dart at the music page, and it lands on one, I think it's Columbia Records. So they go up to Columbia Records. They say, hey, we have this music. We want to show you. We think it's like, you know, David was the one who was like, this is the future. It's going to be big. And his brothers are like, yeah, it's good music, but it's different. So they go up there and the guy's like, yeah, this is pretty good. Let's go ahead and start recording some music. So they record and he goes, okay, I want to release this under one condition. You have to change the name of the band. And the other two brothers were like, you know, they kind of thought about it. And David was like, no deal. He's like, we don't change the name of the band. We don't change the songs. It all comes as like one package. He's like, this is us. Like if you change one aspect of it, we're not the band anymore.
Yeah.
So they were like, obviously the other two brothers were a little pissed about it because they have a record deal that's going to fall apart. So they said, yep, forget it. You know, time went on. They couldn't really play anywhere. They ended up, the three of them move up to Vermont. Death kind of fades away. They start another like gospel band, kind of weird, wasn't really good. People liked the music, but they didn't like the religious aspect of it. Years went on. David gets homesick. He moves back to Detroit. The other two brothers stay up there because they ended up, I think, both meeting their wives, mm-hmm. up in Vermont. And they end up getting into reggae instead.
Oh.
Yeah. Still not great music. I listened to it. Lamb's Bread was the name of their band. I mean, it's okay. It's just not my cup of tea. So they get into this. David's still back home. He kind of like, he writes and he does like all this like artistic stuff, but they're together as a band. They're, you know, just not happening. So the one of their brothers ends up getting married. So he invites David to the wedding. David brings a case with him with all of the Death albums, everything they've recorded, like the master tapes, you know, because he got the master tapes from Columbia Records. And he said, hey, you're not ever going to see me again. But he goes, one day someone's going to come look for like all this. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, I just can't talk about it. This is probably the last time we're ever going to meet. So he gives him like the stack of everything. And he goes back home and then he ends up dying of lung cancer like months after the wedding.
Oh.
Yeah. Have you heard this?
No.
So he dies of lung cancer. The whole family shook. The two brothers stay up in Vermont, you know, kind of just doing their thing. You know, I skipped over a part. So right before they went to Vermont, they pressed 500
copies of the vinyl.
Yeah, of the vinyl, just the singles, like 45. On the front side, their big hit was called Politicians in My Eyes. And on the back side, it was Keep on Knocking was the other song. So they had all this stuff. And I think they ended up trying to get some artwork and they gave that to somebody in exchange for their artwork because they didn't have the money. Nobody would buy the records, whatever this happens. So these records, there's 500 of these records out there and they're kind of getting circulated. A few people have them. Well, 30 years goes by. Death is like, this seems like it's not existent. Somebody surfaces up with one of these records. They're like, this is some of the craziest, like best punk rock music I've ever heard. Who is this? So they start playing it and stuff. And one of the brothers up in Vermont has a couple kids that just happen to be in the kind of the punk scene. They play a little bit of music. I don't know what their name of their band was at the time, but they're on these punk rock forums and they come across this music and the kid said like he like burst into tears and he's like that sounds like my dad like singing. So he takes it to his dad and he's like, hey, he's like, there's this band that's like all over the internet, like Rolling Stone is talking about it, people are posting it, people are trying to find out who this band is. He's like, is this you? And he's like, yeah, that's us. He's like, but it was like such a long time ago.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so his son's like, I want to start a band and cover all these songs to like bring this like back out to the people so they can like see. And so they start a band called Rough Francis, which was the name of one of the songs that David, that had passed away, had written, you know, just with, I guess, himself or something. And so they start playing these shows, his son, and the people are like, this music's awesome. So, you know, short story long, these guys who back in the 60s, nobody would give them the time of day because of the name of their band, and they had all these great ideas. You know, 30 years later, they thought that they were gone, disappeared. These guys come back, and now they're called the pioneers of punk rock because they started making this music in the early 60s, way before the Sex Pistols, way before the Ramones, way before any of these guys, and nobody had ever heard of them.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Dude. Crazy story. You got to check it out.
A band called Death?
They're just called Death. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The whole thing is just, it's nuts to me that during 30 years isn't that long of a
span. So they came back around in like the 90s?
It was the early 2000s.
Okay.
So the early 2000s, they come around. They start getting big and the guy's like, this is insane. He goes, David would be like, he just wouldn't believe this, you know? And they, I can't remember, somebody from some big rock and roll magazine sends this and they say, hey, we should remake these two and reissue this out. And he's like, they didn't want to just make two songs, a couple singles. They're like, find the band. Let's make a whole album. So in 2009, they find the two, brothers, and they say, hey, do you have any more music? Because they only had they're like, well, we have seven songs that were recorded with Columbia. We have the master tapes too. My brother died and gave me this as like the last time I saw him, said somebody's going to come looking for it one day. And he was just like, how did he know that somebody would come looking for this? And now they came and they made a seven song album.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then those two brothers ended up finding another guy, and then they made three more records. And I think 2015 was the last one they made, and I don't think they make it anymore. But
that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Could you imagine being like, crazy. I don't know what, 60, 70 years old or something? Mm-hmm. People just like, hey, that music you made all that time ago, can you play that again?
Yeah. It's crazy. You need to watch it because they're so emotional about it. Because they're like, the guy that was writing the music was like,
he died a long time.
He's like, you don't, and then he was like telling everybody, like, you guys don't understand, like, this is good music. This is music of the future. And then nobody believed him. They're like, the band name's weird. You guys are weird. The music's strange. And now we look back in, 2020 and say, okay, these guys were actually the pioneers of punk rock. And no one even knew then.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I think about these things. And like, we just watched this documentary, the same deal. It's like, this guy made these
sculptures and all this stuff.
And it wasn't until almost, his last couple of years of life where people came and appreciated how much he had to give to
the
culture.
Well, and like he was kind of famous early on, and then World War II happened and everything gets destroyed. You move to America with like no money and that shit just gets like buried.
Yeah. And then somehow it resurfaces when people pass away. And it's just like, well, I wonder why that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
That's a cool story.
Super cool. Yeah. You don't hear stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you got to check it out on your way home tonight.
This is just listen to the music.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How did you hear this story?
I heard it a long time ago.
Really?
Yeah. And then they popped up on Spotify. I was like, oh, I forgot about death.
Oh,
I started
okay.
jamming it, and then I rewatched a little bit of the documentary.
Oh, okay. Okay, it was a documentary.
Yes, yeah. There's a documentary on it, and their brothers are in, the whole family's in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, that's fucking sweet.
Yeah. Cool guys, dude.
Wouldn't it be cool to make a documentary?
Yeah, it'd be a blast.
Right?
But how do you get people to talk to you?
I don't know. You'd have to have like a documentary about something.
I feel like, yeah. It's hard to get people to come on a podcast and talk about things, let alone, hey, sit in front of this camera, tell me about your life.
Tell me everything you know.
Everything. Yeah, no, it would be cool. You'd meet a lot of interesting people.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing some kind of like murder crime thing, that I'd be kind of weird out about that.
Hi, I'm special investigative journalist Mike Balensky.
Yeah.
I want to tell you about a triple homicide I saw where a woman's face was ripped completely off. Whole family was decimated. It was crazy. Let me tell you about it.
Yeah, but how do you confront those people? Hey, man, can you tell me about the time that this happened?
Yeah, can you tell me about that time you found the whole family in their bathtub?
Yes, let me tell you about the worst day of my life. All right, wonderful. Turn the lights on.
Yeah, can you change that backlit color to a nice red for me?
Just be terrible, man.
It would be interesting to talk to those people, though. Like, just to kind of get the psychology behind how they think about this stuff. Because, like, it's almost wonder if it's, like, a different type of person that can do that kind of job. Or if it's just like, yeah, that's what they fell into, and this is just how they think about it to deal with it. Because I can't imagine.
As an investigator or something?
Yeah.
I think it'd be a fun job.
I mean, I guess as long as like you don't come across like the super horrible shit, it would probably be pretty cool and interesting. But there's got to be some wacky shit.
Oh, yeah. No, it would be fun. It would be cool. But it'd be like I have the utmost respect for like nurses and paramedics and stuff like that, because you got to deal with a lot of, dying people or sick people on their worst days. So
yeah,
that part would suck, but I think it'd be fun, like investigating, like finding clues to,
I found a little clue.
Look at that.
Here.
There's a clue. Yeah.
Where the missing child go?
Exactly. Like that would be kind of fun.
It's like, Matt, you don't have to tiptoe around. Like we're just doing a sweep
ask
of this.
Us questions. Just ask the question. Stop whispering.
So, where do you think the bodies are hidden?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that guy. So, I don't know. It's interesting that you when the way you say it of the guy being like, this is the next wave, like this is the future of music, right? Yeah. Like this is what's next. Like you got to pay attention to this. Like, I guess that's kind of how so many things are, where like somebody from a younger generation is like, this is the next thing. Like, guys, this is clearly the next thing. And then it takes off, but every generation above them can't see it.
Yeah.
It almost seems like the way that humans are made is like there is a natural division between the ages, right? Just like as a young person, you don't see all this stuff, right? You don't have all the experiences and everything, but like you can see what you can see. And then when you kind of hit your 20s or 30s and like start maturing, you learn more things and you kind of step into like a next section of life. But now, like at 28, if I were to go try to figure out like what the kids are doing, like I'm going to have a way tougher time of being able to see that, you know, like there, and it kind of gives the younger generation the ability to grow their own thing and not be so like infected by the older people in a way, you know, like you're influenced. Yes. Your older people have much more control over like the playing field of things for the younger people, but like they can't be part of that culture. And if they are, kids are like, what the fuck is this person doing?
Yeah, it's awkward. Yeah, yeah.
Like, why is this old guy with a fedora at this, like 18 plus club? Like, what's the deal?
And you run into those people. In college, there was this guy that would be at Brother's Bar all the time. And it was just weird. He was always there. Nobody knew why.
What was his?
I don't know. Just dancing and hanging out and drinking with all the college kids. He was like maybe 75, 80.
No.
Old guy. Yeah.
Like old guy.
Yeah. It's cutting the rug, dude.
Holy shit. Was he dancing and stuff?
Yeah, doing what he could. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Would he like hit on girls or?
I'm sure he would.
Yeah, dude. That's something.
I mean, when you're living in Muncie, Indiana, if you're living in that area, you're probably at that age. Yeah.
Can I tell you a story about when we were at your wedding and we left? So that morning we were flying out of
curious to see what you're gonna say
here. We were flying out of the airport in South Bend.
The next day you guys flew out, right?
Yeah. That morning we had like fairly early flight and we like go to call an Uber and there's like none, right? Yeah. And there's like somebody else was like, we got to go to a different airport and we got to be there in like an hour and a half, and it was like 30 minutes away at least. So one of the other guests there ended up driving them, and then an Uber popped up, so we got it. Pulls up like beat up car, and then he goes like, hold on, before you go to try to put your bags in the trunk, a lot of water is going to drip out of here, so just let me open this and just give it a second for the water to fall out, and then you could put your bags in. We're like, all right. And then so we put them in, and then we close the door, and we get in the car, and he's like, he's FaceTiming with some woman, and then we
he's driving.
Yeah, while he's driving, but it's on the thing, and then he's like keeps telling us for the first like 5 minutes of the trip, I don't know that we're gonna make it all the way there. I think my car is gonna fail before we make it there. I think my car is gonna break down. He said it a bunch of times in a really short period of time.
Did you peek up and look at like his engine light and everything was on? Probably
every fucking light. Every light was on. We were driving like way under the speed limit. And he's like, this is my girlfriend. She's from the Philippines, and she's in the Philippines now. And she always is FaceTiming me because she gets worried that I'm going to cheat on her with like while I'm driving for Uber. So I have to stay on the phone with her the whole time.
I hope he has unlimited data.
And we're like, Rebecca and I were like, yeah, can't blame her.
How far is that airport? Yeah,
and he's like, I don't think my car's gonna make it. You know, I just don't know that we're gonna make it there. But my my girlfriend, we're gonna get married. She's gonna come over here. I'm paying for her and her family to come over here. And like, it was the it was
that doesn't surprise me at all.
Why?
I grew up there. I know. I understand the people that live around. I know that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
So where'd you guys fly out of? Chicago or South Bend?
South Bend.
That's a long drive, dude.
That's so like a long drive in a car that's like fucking nut job is telling you you're not going to make it. The only thing around you is cornfields.
From where we were on Johnson Road, that's like from a good 45 minutes at least.
At least a half hour we were in that car. That was a tense car ride. Yeah. I didn't know what to think of that.
Wow. I'm surprised you guys got an Uber, to be honest.
I'm surprised we got one, and I didn't think through that, and I'm surprised we made it there.
Yeah. Thank God you did.
Thank God. Then I could fly out, and we could fucking do whatever we needed to.
Just blow this popsicle. See, let's get out of this town.
Dude, this Sapolsky documentary.
Sikulski.
What is his name? Sikulski.
Sikulski. Sikulski.
Stanislav Sikulski.
Sikulski. Yeah, what'd you think of it?
Dude, I thought it was really cool. It's called Struggle Something.
The Lost Art. It's called, Struggle, the Lost Art of
Stanislav Sikulski.
Yeah.
Dude, it's pretty interesting because people like that are fascinating to me.
So fascinating.
Like, what do you think about people that are like that, seems like almost no self-doubt, right? Like, he was like so confident in so much shit. Is there a part of you that like, in a way, like envies that?
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely, dude. I think anybody that isn't like that and says they don't envy,
they're lying.
That like self-confidence is lying.
I wish I had that fucking dude, confidence.
He like, yeah. It's just like David Hackney that like, he's like, hey, this is like the future. This is great music. People need to hear this music. Like Sikulski, I'm going to butcher his name the whole time. Like people like Muhammad Ali, the same deal. They're like, I am the greatest. Nobody is better at this than I am. This art will live on forever, even after I'm done. Like,
yeah,
I can't say that about anything that I do.
No, not at all.
Like what? But dude, at the same time, that guy lived through wars.
Yeah.
Lived through like a bombing. So maybe, but he sounded like he was like that even like as a teenager.
Yeah. It sounds like when he was young, he was doing all that same stuff of like, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever. And then what was it like? He went to an art school and they were like, okay, but in order to do this, you need to be able to work with real stuff. And he was like, put in my resignation at like 13 years old. It's like, oh yeah, my father sent me from Chicago to Poland and you want me to draw real things? No, thank you. I'm bullshit. Out of here.
I don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I respect the shit out of that.
Yeah. How can
but one of the coolest things for me I saw was the way that he like sculpted shit and the way that it seems to me like the only way I could think about the way you could make art like that is if you really, really like cleared your third eye, if you really like let yourself like fully pray and like commit to the gods or like a heavenly realm and start pulling things from there. Do you know what I mean? Like with his type of art?
It's just, it's otherworldly.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it.
I have never seen statues like that.
Hey, what about that part when Hitler, they wanted him to draw a portrait of Hitler, so he drew him as a ballerina?
Yeah, like as like a pug or
what?
Something like that?
Dude. And then they just send it back and they're like, no, we can't use this.
Yeah. Well, he said that because it was early on when nobody really like knew about the Nazis or like, they didn't know what he really cared about the Nazis. It was
but
like sometime
still,
in the 30s.
Dude, as like a he was like the leader of Germany at the time. Like they knew that he was like
going that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just saying, it's just nuts to me that he would like just
fuck it.
Yeah, he just draws him and he like sends it to him like, what do you think of this?
What do you think of Hitler as a little pug in a ballerina costume?
Yeah. And they just send it back and nobody talks about it again.
Yeah. No, I don't think that I don't think he's going to like that.
Not exactly what we're looking for.
No, this is not the Fuhrer look that we're really going for.
Yeah, what an amazing guy. Talented.
Dude, the sculptures that are like, it's like a hand, but then the hand has like these hooks coming out of it.
They're like faces and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what we got to do for the fucking show is I'll hook the computer up to it, and some of these times I'll just like pull up,
that would be cool,
like what we're looking at.
Yeah,
because I don't know, sometimes we're explaining shit, but like go watch this documentary if you want to see it.
Yeah,
it's called Struggle, and the fucking thing, it's like those little like, yeah, faces or mouths coming out of it. The last sculpture he did, like that was pretty cool. One of the crazy things is that I love about people that are fucking like this is like, he's like, yeah, I couldn't sculpt anymore, so I got obsessed with the origin of the human race.
Yeah.
And he's looking at, like, Easter Island and stuff. And I know that so many people think that that's crazy, but, like, there's so much information out there in the world that you can drown in the most benign shit every single day, but... that kind of thing, that could be literally anything. The origin of humanity can be literally anything. It just, those kinds of theories that come from people like that, I don't immediately go, oh, that's stupid. I'm like,
here's the thing,
what
dude.
Do you got?
It sounds crazy on the surface, but it might not be that far fetched.
Right?
Like, what do you think people like him, like, how does somebody become like that? What do you like? You think that's just they're born that way? Do you think that somehow they're learned to be that way?
I don't know. Yeah, that's what you always wonder is like the nature versus nurture thing. Like,
yeah.
Is that guy that way? Did he have events that kind of helped shape that? Was he predisposed and got the specific events that he needed to become like that? Like,
yeah.
What was the combo?
That's what I'm thinking about. Because all of his friends towards the end of his life, they're like, all right, what do they call it? It's sort of the Z, the concept that he came up with, the origins of humanity. I can't remember what it was called.
I don't remember.
But they're just like, all right, yeah, that sounds pretty good. And he was like still so passionate about it. He's got like 50 volumes on his wall.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there is probably some stuff there that made absolutely no sense. But if you think about it, like we do it like in ancient Egypt, like they find like matching hieroglyphics between things and they make connections and say, oh, okay, this person came from here. Like like people inhabited like from Polynesia, they came to here because of the symbols and things that they left behind. So the idea and the concept they came up with isn't that.
It's not that far fetched.
Yeah.
And dude, after reading, like I'm reading the history of the Stoics right now and it's like, it's got a map like right in the front. Like, look at this. All these names are different. Like, all of these places were historical places that aren't even places anymore. Or, like, obviously, physically, they're places, but they've changed. Yeah. Like, Babylon isn't a thing anymore. Like, all these different things. Our history is so fucking all over the place. Like, this is a book about a series of people over, I think, like 1,000 years or a few hundred years or something, like, and it fits in here.
Yeah.
Like, today's events would fill an entire building of paper to try to, like, write down everything that happened.
Just
and
like
this is, like, a few hundred years. This is so consolidated.
Like you're saying, just, like, the things from today. Like,
just
have happened from, like, 12 midnight.
Yes, from 12 midnight until now that we're recording it. Like, you could literally fill... like an entire building of pages about the events of just today if you really broke it down.
Yeah.
Like this is supposed to be 500 years of history and philosophy and thoughts.
Yeah, that's wild.
Into this like tiny thing. And
thicker book.
Thicker book. Yeah. You know? Like we have so little understanding of where the fuck we come from. And not many people have much understanding of it. Like, the percentage of people that really, like understand a good amount of history and things like that, the lineage of where people come from, or even have like a good theory on it, is what, 0.001% of the population?
Maybe.
If that, like, it's such a small amount. And I don't know why, like, people look at that stuff as crazy. And then it's like the Big Bang. Like, do I believe the Big Bang happened? I think so. Like, yeah, some pretty smart people have said it. But it's funny when people are like, oh, yeah, whatever religion's so fucking stupid, they believe this. It's like, you only believe the Big Bang and all of this shit because somebody told you, and that's what a lot of people tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know if the entire universe started 4.6 billion years ago, like, and like the smallest fucking thing, and blew up to where we're now sitting in a room talking into microphones about the origin of the universe from 4.6 billion years ago. It's like the mind
talking about itself.
Yeah. Like, I got no fucking idea.
Yeah. The only reason we talk about all these things is because we heard it from somewhere.
Yeah. It's a majority of the stuff. But that, I think you just nailed it. I think that is why maybe this guy doing this kind of art is so captivating and like it makes you so envious, because he's like, you can tell that he did not live his life for the perception of other people, like through their perceptions. He like tried to see the world through his own perception of reality, you know?
Like, yeah, he didn't. Yeah, he didn't let anybody's opinions get to him.
Yeah.
And that's what I was kind of, I mentioned to you. It's like, you look at these people have done these great things, and they, nobody ever conforms to like the societal norms.
Yeah.
It's like, but that's what everybody wants you to do. They're like, oh, you need to do this. Like, these are the things that are common. And if you want to be a good citizen, then this is what you do. But then these people, they go and they don't do these things, and they go off a beaten path. They get outside the box. And then those are the people we remember. They're the people that do great things.
Dude, I was watching Gladiator. I know. I was watching Gladiator the other night, and it kind of actually like reminded me of like an alternate way that you can think about life and the universe and tasks and things like that. So this is not spoiler if you haven't seen it. I don't know.
Gladiator's been around for a long
time. Yeah, it's been around for a long time. Sorry. But like, you have the end scene where Caesar like stabs him and then is like, throw his armor on and cover up the wound, and we're going to have the sword fight in the Colosseum. That way I can like show it off. And as he's like in that sword fight, he's seeing like the door to the next world there, but he's not walking through it yet. And he's still staying in the present because he's got a task to do. He's got to fucking kill this guy so that way the lady and her son are safe, right?
That's cool.
And he's like fucking zoning out. He's bleeding out. He got stabbed in the chest. And he's like going into towards that door to the next fucking dimension, realm, whatever. And then he comes back and has to fight this guy. So it's like a clear separation of like your tasks in life to the ability to pass on to the like the next world. It's like, all right, I gotta fucking come back here, finish this important shit
before,
once he kills him, then he's just like, walk through the door, go see my fucking,
that's cool,
wife,
man,
and kid. Yeah. You know, it's like, but that could be a way, that could be how like reality really is, you know? Like, you have the things in your life. Like, you can live what fucking ever kind of life that you want to live and, like, live it. And when it's time to go through the fucking door, like, you go through that door. But, I don't know, each year that passes, it, like, makes less and less sense to, like, conform. Each year that passes, some guy that maybe I would have thought was crazy 10 years ago for making the most fucking wild statues and sounding like a nut job kind of seems like it's maybe actually a better way to live.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, like, you're talking about being envious of him. It's like, he just didn't let anything get to him.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Never got off, like, his beaten path of doing the things that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, those people are cool, man. They're unique.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of people like that.
No. No. And you don't have to be like that. But, like, the ability to be you.
Yeah.
But those people frustrate us, too. Like,
they
in
do.
In real life interaction, like, sometimes they're not good for cooperation and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like going back to the band thing, like, they go to this record label, and the record label loves their music, and they're probably like, oh, cool, we're going to make money off of this. People are going to love this music, and they're like, just change the name of the band. Like, we're not changing the name of the band. They're probably, like, pulling their hair out. What do you mean you won't just change the name of the band? So you know it's a great thing, but
yeah,
butt heads with them on some aspect of what they're doing.
I respect that ability to just be like, nope, fuck it, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm not like that.
No, wish I could be more like that.
Maybe that's part of what we got to start doing.
Yeah.
It's just like being more like that. That's what I got from that.
Absolutely. For sure. I think I more or less got the same thing. That's like the stoicism stuff, is that's what it is. Like, I know you've read it already. I'm reading it or listening to it right now. The Courage to Be Disliked.
Yeah.
You know, along those lines, just doing what you feel is right. And
dude. Yeah. Yeah. That book is fucking good.
Yeah.
I want to go back and actually like read it. I've been listening to it, but I want to go back and read it.
I think reading it, Mason said it's a better read.
It's been a good listen, but yeah, I feel like I'll retain the stuff better. But because there is interesting stuff in there of like the fact that he claims like the trauma doesn't exist and you've got the ability to choose a lot of this stuff. It's like a lot of it when it's explained in that form and like the way he looks at it, I'm like, fuck, yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
You have the choice to do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, mentally you have the choice to like have whatever thoughts you want to have.
Yeah.
Tough. It's tough to learn how to do that for sure.
And just like you got the choice to do your fucking challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, stay on it.
I'm going to.
Stay on it. Dude, part of this too, I want to like talk to the people that are listening.
Yeah.
Like, so if you're listening and you feel like you want to talk to us about like what we're talking about, I don't know. Let us know where you think would be a good idea. We can do like a Discord server or something that.
Can you do this live? Can we do live episodes?
Yeah. I mean, we could do like live Q&A stuff. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what people want to ask us questions about, but.
Yeah, maybe people that are into philosophy or.
And then they're like, hey, what do you guys think about this? And we're like.
We don't know.
Oh, we're not sure. Thank you. Next caller. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, or we just make something up.
Cindy from Minneapolis.
Like, yeah, it's like, here's the thing, man. I'm not up to date on a lot of current events. Like this whole Facebook and Instagram thing that went down the other day. I just know that it was an issue.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. I just knew that people were upset that it was a problem.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, let's do something like that.
All right, I'm down. I'll look into some stuff. I know there's a bunch of ways that you can do it, but
could you be like, "Hey, on this next podcast, we're going to be talking about so and so." Send us some questions ahead of time.
Yeah, it's just got to be like if people want to do it. I want to try to use Pod Inbox so people can leave messages and stuff like that.
Cool.
So, yeah, I'll use this as a snippet. If you want to ask us some questions on the show. Leave us a voicemail on Pod Inbox. Should we try that again? Should we do that again? Was that not a good
thing? I think it was okay. I don't know what Pod Inbox is, but.
Hey, you fucking idiots. If you want to talk to us, you want to ask us some questions.
Pod Inbox.
Check out our Pod Inbox. I think it's podinbox.com/chineon.
So what is it one more time, please?
I think it's podinbox.com/chineon.
And then what do they do?
All you got to do is go there and leave a fucking voicemail, you stupid bitch. Come on.
Perfect. That's easy. So what, they do this ahead of time?
Yeah, just leave us a voicemail, and if you don't get there in time, well, we'll have another episode to do something else later on.
Perfect.
Le Tron Sonamanji.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's from I Love You, Man. He's like, oh. All right, see you later. He's like, Le Tron Sonamanji.
It's a great movie.
Never mind. I'll see you later. Yeah. All right, dude. You want to wrap this up?
Yep.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate it.
Yep. See you guys next Wednesday.
Peace.
Later.